Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Targeted Talks. I'm your host, Nicole Tucker. In this episode, I'm speaking with Dr. Pedro Barada, the director of the Clinical Genitourinary Medical Oncology Research Program at University Hospital's Seidman Cancer Institute, about targeted therapies in prostate cancer. Right now, in prostate cancer. Thank you for joining me today, Dr. Barada. I'd like to start with biomarkers. Can you talk about the biomarkers that we have therapies for in prostate cancer, and what are some emerging biomarkers?
Prostate cancer is a vast topic, and we specifically chat about metastatic prostate cancer, focusing on metastatic castration-resistant disease, right? And we've been seeing an emergence of molecular profiling, right? Genomic testing, and referring not only to somatic testing, meaning what the genomic alterations are in the tumor, but also at the germline level, meaning genomic alterations you were born with. And there's very helpful information that we can get from genetic testing, both germline and somatic, that we can use to make treatment decisions, and all based on their predictive value, in addition to also having some of them having prognostic value. So one example is the story around homologous recombination deficient genes and their ability to predict response to target therapies, such as, PARP inhibitors, for example. That's a hot topic right now. So that's one example of that. We have others. For example, in 2-3% of advanced prostate cancer, we expect microsatellite instability or high tumor mutational burden. And we know those are predictive of response to immune checkpoint inhibitors, for example. And then we have other kind of biomarkers, if you will. I'm thinking of the expression of prostate-specific membrane antigen, like PSMA, and the use of a PSMA-based radioligand therapy, such as lutetium PSMA, for example, right? Or we can even have this kind of specific alteration in certain genes, for example, TP53, RB1, P10, where you basically define molecularly this aggressive variant prostate cancer. And for instance, there's data suggesting that for those particular patients, a combination of a chemotherapy regimen seems to be better than cabazitaxel alone. So again, with the emergence of molecular profiling, and as it becomes available, I think we are learning a lot more. How can we, number one, select treatments for our patients? Number two, when we have them available, is that a logic around sequencing them? Is that an optimal sequence?
Thank you, Dr. Barada. So what are the latest targeted or immunotherapies to enter the prostate cancer space? And what kind of efficacy and safety are we seeing with these drugs?
Well, so in general, for an unselected man with prostate cancer, immunotherapies are very disappointing. We're talking about response rate around 10%. And that's, again, it's not great. And that's as monotherapy. There's some data with combination immunocheckpoint inhibitors, for example, CTLA-4 inhibitor and PD-1, and response rate will be higher in the high 20s. But in general, they are not considered standard of care because we have other therapeutic options who are able to provide the same, if not better, degree of benefit, if you will. So the secret here, I think, is how do we select our patients? We have no doubt prostate cancer is heterogeneous. Therefore, we will find a subset of patients who will benefit from it. The question is, how do we select those? And the low-hanging fruit, it would be mismatch repair deficient, that's Lynch as germline, or microsatellite instability, in addition to high tumor mutational burden. However, that represents a very small, tiny fraction of the population of advanced prostate cancer, again, 2-3% or so. So I think in addition to that, there seems to be an association between patients who have, for example, certain homologous recombination deficient genes and actually a response to immune checkpoint inhibitors. So that number can potentially be higher, including, I'm thinking, CDK12 and others, where immune checkpoint inhibitors seem to play a role. We have not cleared that out completely, but that's kind of where the field is going. And then a completely different scenario would be, target immunotherapy therapies such as BiTE, bispecific T engagers, right? Where you basically find, for example, the PSMA positive cells, most prostate cancer cells do tend to express PSMA. and then T cells. And basically this compound is ability, it has the ability to find, to get them both to chat, right, if you will, meaning to attack the cancer cells. So that's a different form of, you know, of immunotherapy. So there's a number of, and there's others. I mean, we've been talking a little bit about vaccination, et cetera. So immune checkpoint inhibitors, that's perhaps where we have most of the data. And we need to, we are exploring different immunotherapy agents, and hopefully we'll have good news soon on that.
Thank you. So you talked about some of the low activity that we do see with available agents. What other unmet medical needs are there for patients with prostate cancer?
Unfortunately, we are not able to cure the vast, vast majority of patients who present with metastatic prostate cancer. So the goal of the game then is to control the disease. You know, and so once patients become castration resistant, meaning once they've progressed despite low testosterone levels, you know, the number of treatments we use, unfortunately, are not able to provide us durable remissions, right? For the most part, we do have a few exceptions, but not for most cases. In other words, patients see one treatment after the other, and unfortunately, they tend to progress and ultimately succumb to the disease. So to me, that's an unmet need. We've done a lot of progress. The median overall survival right now, it's beyond, you know, for mCRPC at least, is, I think it's beyond now 3 years or so, in addition to hormone sensitive. So we have patients living with stage four prostate cancer for almost 8 years, 7, 8 years, right? And, but of course, that's a, people are not numbers. And some people do better or the same as that. Some people don't do as well. I'm thinking patients with aggressive visceral disease, a lot of disease, you know, or those with high volume, you know, disease in hormone sensitive space with newly diagnosed metastatic disease. So all of these are some of the factors, right, that are poor prognostic factors in addition to RV7, for example, or in addition to BRCA, right? We know those patients tend to do poorly. So all of these unmet need. The other aspect that I think is relevant is access to care. It is true that we've been talking a lot more about disparities, and that's a good thing. It's quite interestingly, you know, patients of African-American descent, you know, seem to respond the same, if not better, to systemic therapies. We see that when we kind of match patient and disease characteristics. So the thing is access. Often we see African-American patients being diagnosed at later stages, not having access to the same opportunities and same therapies. So that, to me, that's also an unmet need, is to how can we provide the same level of care to everybody, right? And then often, obviously, that takes into consideration, you know, economic factors, sociocultural factors, et cetera, that we need to work together to improve them. So that's another unmet need, in my opinion. Another one is access to genetic testing. You know, right now, numbers for genetic testing in general is around 40%, if they're high. And, you know, and we know if we don't test, we don't find. And look, at our conversation has been around what targets can you find in the tumor, but you need to test to find that out. And if you do test, the question is, when do you test? Do you test too late in the game, or you test it when you actually can do something about it? So that is also an unmet need, is to, you know, raise awareness for the importance of genetic testing, perhaps do work to provide the care teams out there with the ability to actually have the infrastructure to actually test. It's not easy, right? Because it takes time. We also need to understand what the results mean. So there's a lot of barriers. And I think genetic testing, or the lack of genetic testing, is another unmet need. So there's just a few examples. I'm sure there are others, but, you know, that we can actually work together and try to, you know, improve those. And ultimately, patients will benefit the most from it.
So, Dr. Barata, you gave a talk recently at the ACCC annual meeting and Cancer Center Business Summit. What are the key highlights from your presentation?
Again, basis for our conversation was molecular profiling. There's a lot to be said for each of these groups. So, for example, you know, if we think of homologous recombination deficient genes and PARP inhibition, the story is not that simple. It seems like different HRR mean different things as far as predicting activity of PARP inhibition, for example. So BRCA2 is very different from ATM, etc. So there's a lot of the story. So one thing we learned, that genetic testing is a good thing. And the second thing is, oh, wait, maybe not all are the same. And then we start to learn a lot more about every single one of them, right? So that's just one example. The other example is, you know, the PSMA therapeutics, which we'll talk as well during our ACCC meeting. And the question is, where are we going to go? And I think it's a fair statement for me to say, lutetium PSMA is the first of many. And it's not just beta particles, it's also alpha particles. You know, I mentioned bytes in the past. By the way, other targets that not PSMA, I'm thinking human kallikrein 2 and others. So again, we're talking about, you know, PSMA-based therapy as right, ligand therapy, but that's a big group. And we're starting to understand a lot more within each one of those groups. And also, we start knowing that, for example, CPOP mutations and activity of novel monotherapies, or as I mentioned, aggressive variant prostate cancer, you know, and the role of chemotherapy with platinum-based chemo. So all of this is evolving. I think over time, we're going to start using molecular profiling to help us decide who gets what. And I try to bring a little bit of that perspective to our meeting at ACCC.
Looking forward. So what ongoing clinical trials are you excited about right now?
I mean, the number of trials ongoing that are exciting is insanely high for me to mention, right? I think they're very important studies who are likely going to change practice once they read out, right? And all of these therapies that I mentioned have the potential to change practice, and some already did, right? So in the PARP story, we are now trying to understand if there's a synergistic effect for all comers, despite irrespective of their HRR status. We're starting to learn a lot more about it. The studies have been positive, and we've been discussing whether or not what that means to patients, right? So we're starting to learn more about that. Combinations, right? PARPs, immunotherapy, you know, is also relevant. Also, in the context of radioligand therapy, you know, do we have a role to combine those therapies with target therapies, for example? And we are doing studies from that perspective. I love the story around high-dose testosterone and, for example, homologous recombination deficient genes and seem to benefit the most from high-dose testosterone. So I would love to see, you know, and I know those studies are being designed as we speak. So it would be lovely to see what it comes out of that, because I think there's definitely potential for patients to benefit from it, right? You know, even with chemotherapy, we're starting to get other signatures then to help those, you know, to select who gets what based on those signatures. You know, I think it's an exciting time for prostate cancer, for patients, you know, in a sense that they would expect better novel therapies to get access to them, and also for investigators and care teams, because they will have more tools in their toolbox of options for patients. So that's very exciting times.